Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning wake up call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 2 hours. Yes, 2 hours. A show so big we need all 2 hours, maybe even 3 hours. If I can go 3 hours. But we'll sell for two right now. August 11th, 2012, 31 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. A lot to do. Certainly we'll do some Olympics, PGA Championship, some football. We have a big football program with the college previews and the AFC East divisional preview. A couple guests scheduled maybe. We'll see. But we begin in the City of Angels, La La Land, with the Los Angeles Lakers, who have done it again. You remember in the summer of 1996, Jerry West at the helm. You trade Vlade Divac for Kobe Bryant, who at the time, you know, was just a high school All-American. People say, "Yo, he's great. He's a good player." Jerry West said, "You know what? This guy's going to be one of the all-time greats." People laughed, and the rest, as they say, has been history. But the big one, the big piece he landed that summer was Shaquille O'Neal as a free agent. O'Neal, who left Orlando. West mortgaged just about everything to get Shaquille O'Neal, and three championships later, the Lakers were the team of the decade in the 2000s. Fast forward now to 2012. Lakers coming off a disappointing loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Younger, more athletic. Durant, better player than Bryant in this point in his career. What are they going to do? What can the Lakers do? Are they done? Will Kobe even ever make it to the finals again? Will he even make it to the Western Conference Finals? They get Steve Nash for a trade exception. Okay. Still, Oklahoma City and possibly San Antonio are better. Dwight's never coming to L.A. They might stay in Orlando. But no. The Los Angeles Lakers do it, and no other franchise in basketball can rebuild or reload on the fly like the Los Angeles Lakers. Nobody. It's not even close. They play chess. Everybody else is playing checkers. I mean, I can even go back to 2007, beginning before the season, that summer. The summer of discontent in the world of sports. Kobe Bryant screaming, "I want to be traded." Coming off another playoff exit to the Phoenix Suns, "I want to be traded." Mitch Kupchak said, "No, you're going to be here." They turned Kwame Brown into Paul Gasol. Three straight finals and two championships follow. The last year that Shaquille O'Neal was a Los Angeles Laker, they trade Shaquille O'Neal. There were sports talk hosts who said that Jerry Buss wouldn't live to see another championship. What are you doing? Trade Kobe. He's the malcontent. He's the one that's breaking up the team. He's not the big man. Shaq is. Kupchak said, no, you will fire me before I trade Kobe Bryant. I will not trade Kobe Bryant. I won't be a general manager that trades a 25-year-old in his prime who has a chance to be one of the top five players of all time. No, it's not going to happen. Kupchak trades Kobe, trades Shaquille O'Neal, just Caron Butler. Again, turns Caron Butler into Kwame Brown. Kwame Brown turns into Paul Gasol. They draft Andrew Bynum and turns Andrew Bynum into Dwight Howard. This is what they do. And people fail to realize about Mitch Kupchak is he learned from the best. He studied under Jerry West for over a decade. Jerry West, to me, arguably the greatest personnel guy and general manager in the history of team sports. He's right there. Jock LaMares, yes, there's a couple guys that are up there and you know, when you go across the board in the four major sports. But Jerry West is on that Mount Rushmore of general managers and personnel guys, period. I mean, when you spend 10 years or 15 years learning and picking your mentor's brain, you're gonna know a few things. And the Lakers played this thing perfectly. They played it perfectly. Now they had some help, let's be honest, with Orlando. We'll get to the Orlando aspect of this later on in the program because I this segment isn't big enough for me to discuss everything that Orlando did wrong. But the Lakers were patient, not giving up Gasol, not trading Bynum or Gasol during the season for these little mini deals like what Houston was offering Minnesota for Minnesota had interest in Gasol. Stayed patient, kept both commodities, and now they stand here as at worst, 1A to Miami. Still got to give Miami an edge. They are the defending champions. They play together. So I always give the champions their respect. But matchup-wise, Lakers match up with them better than anybody in the league, period. And the Lakers are the team to beat in the Western Conference. I don't care what anybody says about Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, you know, Steve Nash can't guard Russell Westbrook. Well, you know what? He doesn't have to. Because as soon as Westbrook goes past Steve Nash, you're going to have 14 feet of centers and power forwards waiting for him at the rim. So good luck with that. Durant scores on everybody, but they can't stop Durant. Nobody can stop Durant. Miami didn't stop Durant. Okay? Most importantly, for the Lakers, and not even for this year and for this year in terms of winning a championship, is their future has been solidified. Okay? I don't know if people realize this. Kobe Bryant, Ron Artest and Paul Gasol's contracts will come off the books after the 2013-2014 season, which will lead the Lakers roughly about $55 million off the in terms of being off the salary cap, which again will allow them to go out there and get the next superstar or stars to build around Dwight Howard. Yeah, nobody's talking about that, but it's a fact. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, we'll have certainly more on this trade, one of the dumbest trades in NBA history, one of the most unique trades in NBA history, and one of the best trades in NBA history. We'll talk about how all that comes together. 347-215-6180. This is the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, Cyril Quinn taking you to 1:30 as we do a special 2-hour show. Follow me. You can follow me always on Twitter at William Jero. Hit me up on Facebook.com/ Cyril Quinn. Or, of course, you can go to my website, CyrilJeroQuinn.com. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning is, who is the NBA's best team? Miami, the Lakers, Boston, or OKC. That is, those are your choices. When we return, can Tiger end his drought, and the Honey Badger has been dismissed. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. But before we get to that, we have a special guest. Caller, what's on your mind? What's your name and what's on your mind?
This is Liz Robbins calling into the show.
Hello, Liz. How are you doing today?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing fine and certainly doing great as a Los Angeles Laker fan.
I am sure you are, and you know what? I hope that works out.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Liz Robbins. Liz, because anybody from the D.C. metro area knows who Liz Robbins is, but for the national audience, for people who may be in other countries listening to this show, tell us about yourself.
Well, first I want to say hello. My name is Liz Robbins. Been modeling and acting for a little bit, but otherwise I'm a full-time working woman. Got a lot of fam on Twitter out there, so they can definitely check me out there at Liz's Locker Room. I do a radio show every Saturday with Moni Love. That's on Sirius XM Channel 46 called Ladies First, where I do the sports updates. And I'm actually about to work on a magazine called Hail Magazine, and for people in the D.C. metro area, Hail as in Hail to the Redskins. The magazine will be geared toward Redskin news reports, so definitely check that out and look out for that.
And before we get into the Redskins, Liz, for my Wire fans, and there are a number of you out there, Liz appeared on Season 3 episode. I forgot the name of the episode, but she appeared with Shakima Greggs, who Sonya Sines, flirting with her in the bar. So that, if you want to go to that scene, I know you Wire fans know, probably know every scene like I do. She was on that, made that appearance. So Liz is certainly
alive. All due respect, episode 2. So that's the name of the episode. Yeah, and I've been in King and Maxim. I guess I really didn't give the full resume.
Well, we have only a couple of hours here. I mean, your resume is certainly a long resume. Liz, I got a chance to see the Buffalo Washington game. You spent a lot of time at training camp. What has stood out to you over the course of the past couple of weeks with the Redskins?
So far, I see, RG3 really being motivated. Definitely some concerns on the O-line, but, the first preseason game was Thursday night. He really looked poised in the pocket. Trent Williams was hurt, so that's definitely going to be a hit. But the good thing is that RG3 is a mobile quarterback, so he can get out of situations. But all in all, he's still going to need that protection. Defense looked incredible. I'm so happy that London Fletcher came back, because I was going to be a very upset fan if they didn't re-sign London Fletcher. I mean, everybody said he's 37. He led the NFL in tackles last year.
So
I don't understand a man that can still do it. People want to get rid of you. You hit your 30s, they're ready to put you out the pasture. If you still got it, Darryl Green played until 40, and he was running a 4.4 at 40 years old. So, age ain't nothing but a number if you got it in you. So, a little concerned at the safety position, still trying to get to know these safeties, since LeRon Landry bailed up to the Jets. So, I'm intrigued. I'm not a delusional fan. I got fans talking playoffs, Super Bowl. I mean, any given Sunday, it can happen. I'm definitely a believer in that, because no one had the Giants. No one was checking for the Giants last year to win the Super Bowl. At least I know I wasn't.
Right.
But, I think we can have a decent season. I'm saying 7-9, maybe even 8-8 to push it a little bit. But I think with all this pressure that they're bringing into with RG3, comparing him to Cam, Cam, phenomenal, but every rookie doesn't have that kind of season.
So
I'm
Blaine
Gabbert. Yo, Gabbert. But I'm definitely excited. Haven't been excited in about 20 years, with this team. But it's going to take some patience.
It's funny that you say that about you haven't been excited about in the last 20 years. Because I've been a Redskins fan since, I would say, the Doug Williams Super Bowl. it has been a long time since. You do get a sense that there is a new era with, you know, with RG3 coming in. You don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be for the future. These quarterbacks, you know, you can flip a coin, but you get a sense that he's got it. Whatever that it factor, that he's got that it factor. But the question is, you know, what do we have the organization to put him in the position to succeed? And that's going to, you know, lead into my next question. Do you think, because we know Mike Shanahan, for all the, you know, two Super Bowls, thinks he invented football. You know,
right.
Do you see Shanahan humbling himself enough to say, hey, I'm going to suit this system to this guy's talents? I mean, how do you see that working out?
You know what? That's interesting you say that, because, you know, they still say that John Elway was the brains behind those two Super Bowls.
Sure.
And coming into this situation, this is going into his third year, where we're 5-11 both years. So the faith is a little wavering. But I think he needs to not only, like you said, cater to RG3 and work with him and adapt him to the system, but also, you know, put his hand on his son. That's where my worry is with Kyle. I think if Kyle has free reign, I'm not sure if RG3 can flourish the way he should. Kyle worries me. Not just the tattoos on his ankles. He just worries me with his system. As you know, Rex was out there. Let me just toss. I'm going to just go deep. Hopefully somebody catch it. I don't want that to be part of my
no.
game plan. Let me just see. I'm going to just toss it, and let's see what, you know, let's see who gets up and grabs it. But you know what? If there's another 5-11 season, I'm not sure if Shanny's going to make it.
That's it. There's a lot of pressure on Shanahan. There's no question about it. And to me, the thing about it is, I mean, as a Redskins fan, I feel that I'm looking at the record, but I'm not looking at the record. If they go 6, the division is brutal. They have a tough schedule. If they go 6-10 or 7-9, and RG3 is progressing over the course of the season, I'm satisfied, because they still don't have from 1-53 the kind of talent and personnel that these other teams in that division have or in the conference. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, even looking at the positions, wide receiver position, you know, running back, definitely some promise with Royce Doreen-Healy. Definitely, don't get me wrong, you know. You got Moss, you got Hankerson, don't really know what's going to go on with Banks, but we don't have that comfort. You know what I mean? We don't have a Larry Fitzgerald or, you know,
no,
Megatron.
No, That'd be nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned the running back position. Who do you see emerging from that group? I think it should be just a three-headed monster, because none of them, to me, stand out to a point to where you give this guy more carries versus the next guy. They don't have a LeSean McCoy on their team. But what are your thoughts on the running back position moving forward?
Well, I thought Hilo Jr. I thought he would emerge after last season, but I know he had an injury and Royster came through. With Shanahan, I will say he will give you a 1,000-yard running back.
Right.
He can make a great running back. Yeah, that's definitely his forte. But I agree with you. I say turn it into three-headed monster, make it a running back by committee, and just keep it rolling. I think that's probably the best way to go, and let RG3 be who he is, and not necessarily having to depend on the run.
Liz, I know you got to run here. Couple last things. You have been called, and this is on your of course your Twitter, the bye week champion. Explain the bye week champion. I'm guessing this has something to do with fantasy, but explain that title for my audience.
Hey, so as you know, each during the season usually starts about week 5. Each NFL team has a bye week.
Right.
And during fantasy, you know, fantasy football, you play weekly. But if you don't have those players on your bench for fantasy when a bye week comes up, while you're Drew Brees or whatever benched, then I'm coming for you. That's why I call myself the bye week champ. So you better draft for your bye week.
And And one last one for you, because fantasy season's coming up. I'm in two leagues, both paid, by the way. And there's no other way to play, people. I'm not. If you don't have the money to gamble away, then by all means, don't take Junior's college money and throw it into
right.
your fantasy team. But I don't play for that much money. That's I'm gonna be serious here. But I'm in two leagues that we both will be paid leagues, and it's a lot of fun. I'm in two leagues.
Yeah.
Give me your number one fantasy tip in terms of draft. Draft coming up next week for me. What do you think?
Draft overall, even though he doesn't care about your fantasy team, I'm going with Arian Foster. Between Arian Foster and Ray Rice.
Ray Rice. Then. You would take Ray Rice over LeSean McCoy?
I would.
Wow.
I would. Only That's because the quarterback he has. I've been watching some of the training camps with Vic. I think he got hurt though, but I see him trying to be more mobile, trying to pull it down and running more. So that's the only reason, and it's a very it's a slight edge.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
But if I'm going number one overall, I'm going with Arian Foster.
Awesome. You can't lose to that. And again, I'd say that was one last one. This is the last one. Brandon Banks, does he make the team?
You know what? We have like 80 wide receivers. I want him to. I want him to. I can't call it right now, but I want him to. I hope he does.
That sounds like I'll take that as a no.
Right. just from the language and the, I've been listening to Shanahan's press conferences, so I don't think he does, but I want him to. And if he doesn't, I hope he gets picked up by another team and is able to get in the game.
Because
I saw him in training camp. That's a fast little something. Little Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah, he's fast. I mean, he's fast. fast. But I was watching him in the Buffalo game, and I know it was only first preseason game. He just doesn't look like he just runs. He doesn't run good routes. I mean, it's just – he doesn't look like a receiver. And that, It's only one game. He still has some games to get it right. But I've seen teams try to convert these players, these kickoff return players and punt returners into receivers. It normally doesn't work. Devin Hester has been one of the long exceptions. He's just, to me, a tremendous athlete.
Right.
But
I say definitely keep him on a special teams.
So you would just keep him on a special team?
Yeah, I keep him on special teams. Because, they're moving. They moved Niles Paul over to a tight end, and he had a terrible game.
So Cooley's going to be the halfback now? Is Chris Cooley, is that the only way he makes the team?
Niles Paul. That's what it's looking like. Or they, love Cooley. I think they should have traded him.
Or cut him.
And see what they could have got for him. Yeah, or cut him, right. While he's still, before the end of the injury, why he still had some value to him. So
should be an interesting season and down here in the D.C. metro area with the Redskins. Liz, certainly we'll try to get you on over the course of the season as training camp draws to a close, and definitely over the course of the season. I thank you for your time.
Absolutely, and thank you, and good luck on your fantasy draft.
I'm gonna need it. I finished second last year. I want the number one spot this year, though. I want the championship. But we'll see.
All right. Okay.
All right. Have a great morning.
You too.
Liz Robbins, of course. Again, she's all over the place in terms of the DC metro area. Big time sports fan. She's a huge sports fan. It's not just. It's not just one of those, the guys in football pads. No, she knows what she's talking about here and is a big-time Redskins fan. Very interesting. I mean, very interesting for Redskins. I watched the game against Buffalo. RG3 obviously was impressive, though. Listen, let's not make him John Elway here. Let's calm down a bit. You're going against a vanilla defense. He played, three series, had, led him to one touchdown. A three and out and a fumbled snap, a fumbled handoff, excuse me, with Evan Royster. But overall, you liked his sense and his grasp of what they gave him as far as the play calls, 4, 6, 70 yards, a touchdown. He's a special player. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He's a special player. Just my biggest concern is just a matter of will Shanahan, the Shanahans, I should say, put him in the best positioned to succeed. And that was Liz, that was one of her concerns. It's definitely one of our concerns. And we'll get some more Redskins when we do the Redskin report about the offensive line, because it's looking like a mass unit. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll have our Saturday Morning Headlines. We'll also preview the AFC East college football previews, a busy show on this 11th of August, 2012. We'll be right back. Hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, checking you up until 1:30. We got a special 2-hour edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Busy summer. There's been a lot going on this summer. Even, you know, I know, of course, the Olympics, but just a lot of big time, big stories. Normally, I haven't had a summer that I can think of in recent memory that's been this busy. Yeah, I think of, you know, in terms of sports. I mean, normally summer is kind of slow up until, you know, training camp start for the NFL, but it really has been, I mean, this summer has really been a lot going on with this summer. So if you're a sports fan, you certainly have to like or love what's been going on. And, you know, if you've been on vacation, you've been having certainly a lot to chew on. PGA Championship, Tiger Woods is tied, it's in a 3-way tie for first place. With Vijay Singh and Carl Peterson. You have also Rory McIlroy is in the mix, Ian Poulter, Adam Scott. Listen, if Tiger is going to break this 17-major drought, this 4-year drought of going majorless, it's going to happen now. It's going to happen in this PGA Championship. This, to me, is going to be his best chance, considering, to me, how weak this leaderboard is. I mean, Mickelson is even, but there are a lot of big time players that are missing from this leaderboard. Listen, Tiger has had some great moments at the PGA Championship, and it would make perfect sense if he were to win this PGA Championship, considering, you know, you look back at some of his memorable PGA Championships and where he kind of revitalized his career. Remember, 1999, he wins, beats out Sergio Garcia. He hadn't won a major since his first Masters back in 97, so he had basically gone 2 years without winning a major. 2000, he goes back to back, beats out Bob May in that tremendous playoff. May played great in that particular in that PGA Championship, and that capped off to me and to most people the greatest year in the history of golf, as he won three majors that year, winning U.S. Open, British Open, and capping it off with the PGA Championship. So he's had some career defining moments at the PGA Championship. And again, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. Now we've seen Woods, you know, play great in the first couple rounds at majors before, and fall apart in the third round. So it'll be very interesting to see what he does today. Today, of course, is moving day. On Saturdays at golf tournaments, but it's really a critical round. Today is must see if you're a golf fan. It's a real critical round for Tiger Woods in terms of his career, not just this year, but his career. He needs to be either in the lead or within a shot of the lead. He goes out there and shoots a 74, 75. You know, I don't know when he'll win a major. If he doesn't win this major, I don't know when he'll win another one, to be honest with you. Former All-American, former LSU cornerback Tyron Mayhew has been kicked off the team, failed two drug tests. Matthew, of course, was the most dominant defensive player in college football last year. Great on special teams in terms of punts and kickoff returns, had scored four touchdowns, was top five in terms of the Heisman voting. Tremendous player. Again, kicked off the team for failing a couple of drug tests. But don't get it, you know, let's not go crazy here. Okay. It's a big loss, but it does not keep LSU out of the national championship picture and out of the SEC championship picture. Not by a long shot. You know, LSU, Alabama recruit the best defensive talent in the country, okay? Nobody, like, they don't recruit, you know, they don't build their teams, especially their defenses, around one player. They recruit in droves. I guarantee you there's somebody on LSU's bench that's going to be an All-American this year or next year, or that's going to fill in. They play, I mean, they have plenty of talent, in there, especially in the secondary. So I'm not going crazy. To me, LSU is still one of the teams to beat, not only in the SEC, but in the whole country. They're going to be better offensively. And, again, they always have great defensive line play and a great secondary. And this guy, listen, he's a great player. There's no question about it. He's a tremendous player. Certainly hurts his draft stock, but he'll probably be still top 10 in the NFL draft. I would think that this wouldn't take him out of top 10, top 15. But they have other players. Make no mistake about it. They have other players easily. So he is out off the team again, failing a couple of drug tests. You remember he had an issue last year where he was suspended. He was suspended for one game. So he's had some problems there. And you know, listen, when they kick you out, when you're a player of that magnitude and they kick you off the team, you know it was something serious. I mean, even less miles. I mean, it's easy to kick the third string punter off the team, but you know, to kick an All American, one of your best player, and he is their best player off the team, you had to be serious, and it had to be a situation where, you know, if you're LSU, you're not messing around, considering what the NCAA just hit Penn State with. You don't even want to take any chances, so you know, give Les Miles credit, but they certainly will move on. That's not going to keep them from again contending for a national championship. When we return, we will preview the AFC East. Can anybody stop the New England Patriot Express? We'll talk about that. We also have React quotes as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Oh. 6 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. U.S. Olympics, excuse me, Olympics are going to conclude tomorrow, and, you know, thank God. I've been down the Olympics the entire time. If you've been listening to the show, I could care less, frankly, if it ends, when it ends. The fact that it's going to end tomorrow, to be honest with you. I've watched some events here and there, followed the U.S., of course, basketball team. And, you know, the women's basketball team has just been toying with people. I mean, they've been just, it makes no sense, not getting enough attention, but they've been really, like, let me tip my hat to the women. I mean, they don't mess around. I mean, you know, 30, 40, 50-point victories, they just handle their business and keep it moving. So let me certainly give, you know, credit to the women's basketball team. But certainly the thing that stood out to me this week about the Olympics was what is going on in the track and field. Usain Bolt, again, proven to the world that he's, you know, the GOAT, basically, of male sprinters. I mean, to go back-to-back 100 meters, 200 meters, gold medal in the Olympics, and to make it look as easy as he makes it look. I mean, he could have easily, and this is the part that kind of annoys you about him, because he almost cheats himself. He could have easily broke his own world record at 200 if he hadn't, you know, if he wasn't showboating the last, you know, 10 to 15 meters during that race. So, you know, he goes back-to-back in 100, 200 meter with 100, 200 meter gold medals. The biggest story to me, though, is just what exactly has happened to American sprinting, in particular men's. The women are still doing their thing as far as winning gold medals and world championships. What has happened to the, like, I don't get why Jamaica is just kicking our ass all over the up and down every Olympics all of a sudden. I mean, don't we as a country, don't we have the best resources in terms of training facilities, in terms of techniques? I mean, what is going on here? I mean, there's no great American race, no great American sprinter that can even come close to Usain Bolt. I mean, it's really not. I mean, the competition is coming from his own country with Johann Blake, who finished second in the 200. I mean, the Jamaicans swept the 200 meters. You know how embarrassing that is as an American to watch that? And I'm not anti-Jamaican. Let me get that out of the way. But if you're on the U.S. Olympic Committee and you're watching this, you have to be embarrassed by this. I mean, we're the same country that's produced Carl Lewis and Jesse Owens and Michael Johnson, some of the greatest track athletes, some of the greatest sprinters in history. I mean, Bob Beamon. I know Bob Beamon wasn't a sprinter, but I'm just talking about track and field in general. I mean, what is going on? I don't get it. I mean, Tyson Gay's had a nice career, but he's not sniffing Usain Bolt. And again, Usain Bolt is an awesome, the greatest sprinter of all time. Let's not, you know, let's not get him mistaken. But I'm just curious about why there are no top American male sprinters. I mean, I get on tennis all the time. Okay, I get on tennis, you know, I say, well, where are the American men's tennis players? But, you know, tennis is a world-dominated sport now. I thought that American track was the dominant. I thought American track was supposed to be the dominant force. America is supposed to be the dominant force in terms of track and field. But apparently not when it comes to sprinting. I mean, Jamaica was having a party in 200 meters. It was like, geez, what is going on here? Why is that not being talked about? I don't understand why that's not a story. Again, we used to own track and field in terms of the males, American men. We used to own it. Just a thought. Again, Usain Bolt is the greatest of all time. And Carl Lewis's comments were very unfair. I mean, come on, don't have sour grapes here. Listen, he's better than you as a sprinter. Not as an Olympian, it's a difference. As an Olympian, Carl Lewis, you know, did 100, 200 long jump. You know, Carl Lewis is a better all-around Olympian and athlete than Usain Bolt. But as a pure sprinter, Usain Bolt has no equal. I mean, let's just keep it real here. And Carl Lewis's comments, you know, to try to rain on this guy's parade after he's done something historic is kind of, it was kind of, you know, classless, to be honest with you. It really was. Of course, tomorrow you will have gold medal games for the men's and women's. USA women taking on France. And of course, the men will be taking on Spain, which should be a very interesting game. The amazing thing about this USA basketball team, the men's, this version, has been how quickly they can turn a close game into a blowout. I mean, it happens within like a blink of an eye. I mean, they'll turn a 2-point game into a 25-point game in 3 minutes. And you've seen as the games have gone on and as they become more important, the Mamba, Kobe Bryant, you know, had 20 points in the second half against Australia, had 11 in the first quarter against Argentina, set the tone to allow, you know, LeBron and Kevin Durant to finish it off. And I guarantee you that gold medal matchup tomorrow against Spain, the Mamba will play a big role. It'll play a major factor. You have to be impressed with how they play. People forget, and I hope that the Dwight Howard signing reminds them that you put Dwight Howard, Derrick Rose, Chris Bosh on this team, nobody would sniff this team within, you know, 40 or 50 points. Nobody. They played extremely well. Yes, they shot too many threes. Yes, but the 3-point shot is, you know, about a foot closer, 22 feet. So it's, you know, it is tempting. But, you know, they've been shooting. They've been making them. They've been making them so far. So, again, there'll be an interesting game against Spain. I think they'll win by at least 10 or 15 points. I don't think that this is a close game inside 2 minutes. Because, to be honest with you, I just don't think Spain has not played well in these Olympics. They really struggled big time, especially, you know, lost to Russia early on. They haven't played well at all. So I expect a USA gold medal and a second one for LeBron and Kobe and Carmelo Anthony. 13 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, when we return, we will preview the AFC East. Will the Jets make the playoffs? Find out. It's coming up on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. 15 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. As we go 2 hours, this special edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we're going to continue previewing the NFL season. We're going to go into the AFC East, where the team to beat, and surely no secret, are the New England Patriots. I saw a publication that projected the New England Patriots to go 16-0. And I said, what? Really? 16-0? Then I looked at their schedule and I said, now the realm's a possibility, but it's not going to happen, though. Again, New England coming off a Super Bowl loss to the New York Giants for the second time in 5 years, returned one of the NFL's best offenses. Anytime you have Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez, Wes Welker, and then you add Brandon Lloyd, that's certainly right up there amongst the best offenses in the league. I'll be concerned, though, just early on in last season they kind of fell in love with throwing the ball on seemingly every down. Remember, Brady had the 500-yard passing game against Miami. Still need to run the ball a little bit. They added Joseph Addai. I don't know how much he has left in the tank, to be honest with you. Again, the secondary to me and their defense to me is still kind of suspect. They lose Andre Carter, who played great for them last year. They were mixing and matching with the secondary. Still have a couple of decent players in the secondary with Devin McCourty. But again, that defense was god awful last year. And I also would keep my eye on Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski, who had the greatest season that any tight end has ever had last year, did a lot of partying in off season. You know, he did sign a new contract. But for my fantasy heads out there, I'd be kind of nervous about him, to be honest with you. Be kind of nervous. But again, they're going to score some points. Looking at their schedule, they did draft six defensive players to try to up that defense. Their defense in terms of yards per game was 31st in the league, but they were about middle of the pack in terms of points. So they did have some form of bend but don't break. But again, you can move the ball at will on that defense, and no two ways about it. And their team is dictated by their offense. They're not going to beat you in a 14-10, 17-14 game. They want to beat you 28-23 or 35-27. Tough opening to their schedule. At Tennessee, they're home to Arizona, at Baltimore, at Buffalo, home to Denver, at the Jets, at Miami, home to Houston, home to San Francisco. So they have a tough opening to their schedule, but they are clearly the class of this division. It's not even close. I mean, there's nobody remotely in this division that can compete with them. Nobody. I'll project them to be 14-2. But overall, though, and they are a legit Super Bowl contender. Overall, though, I don't think they're winning a Super Bowl. I just don't think that they – and they're similar. They are very similar, and it's amazing. They're similar to the San Antonio Spurs in this respect. When the Spurs were winning championships, they were doing it with their great defense. When they had Duncan in his prime, Duncan and Robinson, and then Duncan in his prime, they did it with great defenses. They did it with winning games 90-82, 88, 85, things of that, you know, scores like that. Patriots were winning Super Bowls. They were winning it with Teddy Bruschi, you know, Lloyd Malloy's of the world, those type of players. And, they did, you know, getting the key turnovers, frustrating Peyton Manning. This new-look Patriot team, you know, since 2007, when they had the historical offensive season, with Randy Moss and Brady leading the way, yes, it's been championship contender, but look what this offense has done in big spots. Look how many points they've scored in their Super Bowl losses to the Giants. Scored 17 last year. 2007, they scored 14. In years where offensively they put up over 500 points. In big games, they have this offense in big games against proven playoff defenses, they have not played well. Even Baltimore last year. Even going back to San Diego in the AFC Championship in 2007. Haven't played well. So that's something to keep your eye on moving forward, big picture. Now, the division, their division is done. They had a division in their back pocket. But moving forward, big picture, if you're a New England Patriot fan or you're somebody who follows the Patriots, why can't this offense in big spots in the playoffs score, you know, put up 25 to 30 points? Regular season, they're world beaters. Next in line, I'm going to say the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo, again, offensively, they have some question marks. I understand with being able to stretch the field. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a guy who's going to stretch the field. They don't have, you know, Stevie Johnson is a tremendous possession receiver, but he's not a guy that's going to make you nervous. You know, he's not Randy Moss. He's not a guy, Vince Jackson. He's not a guy that's going to make you nervous, you know, going past 20 yards. I don't think they did enough to upgrade the wide receiver position. I do like their running game with Spiller and Fred Jackson. Jackson was having a tremendous year before he got hurt. They have a pretty good offensive line. They have the strength of their team, though, is their defensive line. They have one of the best defensive lines in football. When you talk about Marcell Dareus, Mario Williams, the big, you know, Frazier acquisition they picked up from Houston, Kyle Williams. And picking up also Mark Anderson. Dave Wannstedt, as a defensive coordinator, to me, is, you know, adds a lot to that team. Wannstedt is an awful coach, but he is a great defensive coordinator. I think it'll certainly help them a lot. It'll help them a lot. You know, Buffalo is a team that, again, they have a pretty good secondary with Jarius Byrd and George Wilson. Wilson had a big year last year. Vince Young, I think, is a perfect backup quarterback, to be honest with you. If, you know, Fitzpatrick goes down or doesn't play well. I like Buffalo. I think Buffalo has some talent. Last year, they missed the playoffs. They got off to a fast start, 5-2. Again, they're nowhere near New England, and I'm not expecting them to compete with New England. Looking at the key part of their schedule, I would say they'll have a stretch where they go New England, at San Francisco, at Arizona, Tennessee, home, bye week, at Houston, at New England, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, at Miami, St. Louis. If they can navigate that particular stretch in their schedule, they should be in line to possibly have a good record and be a playoff contender. I don't think they're making the playoffs. I'm projecting them to be 9-7, but I think they'll be in a hunt, but I don't think they're making the playoffs, but I'm predicting them to be the second place team in the AFC East. Wild card team in this division, and again, wild card, I don't mean in terms of making wild card, making a playoffs with a wild card, but the wild card turns into a team that can go either direction. The New York Jets, I'm not in love with the New York Jets. I still don't like their locker room. Okay, I still don't like the locker room with Santonio Holmes and Antonio Cromartie. You have Cromartie making a comment on the second best receiver on the team, which he could be, and that's a major problem. I'm not in love with this offense. You know, they have a very good offense. They have a pretty good offensive line. So a pretty good offensive line. Major question mark with the right tackle situation. You know, who's their number two running back? You know, before we get to the passing game with Tebow and Sanchez and the lack of receivers, you have Sean Green, who's pretty good, who's okay, and Joe McKnight? Really? Joe McKnight's your second running back? I just want to know who's their number two running back. Is Tebow? Tebow could be their second best running back. When your backup quarterback is your second best running back, that's a problem. Who's their second best receiver? Chaz Schillings? Dustin Keller. I mean, to me, this team has a lot of limitations offensively. And that's, of course, assuming that Mark Sanchez can break out of the year-long funk that he had last year. He was awful, 26 turnovers. And doesn't get distracted by, you know, being called Tim Tebow during, you know, press conferences. The Jets are going to be, certainly for pure entertainment value, the Jets are going to be certainly one of the better teams to watch. From a football standpoint, I don't like the Jets. I just don't like them. Defensively, I think they'll be around the same. You know, they still have some good players, great players defensively. Mike DeVito's very good. David Harris, Calvin Pace, Revis, of course, is the best cornerback in all football. They're hoping that Muhammad Wilkerson can generate more of a pass rush. That's something that they struggled with last year. They're going to do some 4-3. They're going to mix some 4-3 with the 3-4 as well. Still be mainly 3-4, but they're going to do some 4-3 stuff defensively. But I don't like the Jets. I'm looking at their opening. Their season will be dictated by how they open. They're home to Buffalo, at Pittsburgh, at Miami, home to San Francisco, home to Houston. Then they have a home to Indianapolis and at New England. I think at worst they need to get off to a 4-3 start to have any chance to make the playoffs or have a decent season, to be honest with you. And keep in mind, that defense last year, despite the fact that they might have been top five in terms of yards per game, in terms of points, they gave up about almost 23 points a game. That defense did not play great last year. They're going to have to be dominant for the Jets to have any chance to make the playoffs. Dominant. Again, I don't like teams coming in to the season with a lot of baggage. Now, we'll get to the AFC South next week. You know, when you say, well, what about the Saints? We'll get to that. But I think the Saints locker room is a little bit more stable with Drew Brees than the Jets. The question about the Jets is not if Tim Tebow will become the starting quarterback. When will Tim Tebow become the starting quarterback? I would say week 5. That's the week that I'm getting points to. I think week 5. So when they start out like 1-3, I think you'll see Tim Tebow. And frankly, you know, good luck with that. So I think the Jets will be 7-9 this year. I do not think they're making the playoffs. I have them at 7-9. And in the basement, in the cellar, the Miami Dolphins with the three-headed quarterback monster of Matt Moore, Ryan Tannehill, and David Garrard, who might have to have surgery, by the way. Offensively, Miami is just it's a freak show, and it's not in a good way. Clearly, they don't have a quarterback. And if I'm Joe Philippin, I'm starting. I'm just throwing Ryan Tannehill out there. You know what? Let me take that back. If I'm Joe Philippin, I'm starting Matt Moore. Let him get knocked around, and then grooming Ryan Tannehill for like week 4 or 5. I don't want to destroy Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill's confidence, because Miami's gonna have a rough time being in this division and being just anemic offensively. I mean, look at their receivers. I mean, you're talking about Chad Johnson, Brian Hartline, Devon Best, Legu Nene. I mean, that's their receivers. I mean, Devon Best is probably the best receiver. I don't even know who their best receiver is. They have a pretty good offensive line. Reggie Bush is coming off his best year. I don't know if he can replicate that, because they're gonna have 8 and 9 in the box. Defensively, they were good last year. Still have a suspect secondary. Have some good players up front with Carlos Dansby and Cameron Wake. Again, they have a tough opening to their schedule. I mean, at Houston, Oakland, home to the Jets, at Arizona, which is never easy, even though they don't have a quarterback, at Cincinnati, home to St. Louis, at San Francisco, Tennessee, you know, Miami's going to, it's going to be a long year for the Dolphins. It really is. Rough division. I have them 5-11. I have them at 5-11. I can't see no more than 5 wins, maybe 6 if everything breaks right. Again, expect to see Ryan Tannehill by week 3 or 4, if not sooner. So I think they really wanted to start David Garrard, but this injury certainly, you know, could put a damp to that. So I'll take New England 14-2 to win this division outright. It'll be the upset of the century if they don't win this division. Buffalo 9-7 to contend for a playoff spot. The Jets to take another step back, and Rex Ryan will be fired at the end of the season. They'll go 7-9. And I like Miami to go 5-11 as they as they will finish last in this division. Still very decent division. Anytime you have a Super Bowl contender in your division, it's a relatively strong division. Interesting to see Buffalo. Buffalo will be the team to me that's most intriguing. So it'll be very interesting to see how they progress with some of the talent and some of the talent that they have. Again, gave Ryan Fitzpatrick a lot of money. He's not a franchise quarterback, so we'll see about that. Will Vince Young play? That's a question to me about Buffalo. Will Vince Young see the field? Certainly will. That'll be one of the question marks going into the season for them. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll have our React quotes of the week. We'll be right back. NBA Finals game clinchers, basically from, I'd say, 1991 to 2000 and probably 12. Right now they have Chicago against the Lakers, which I should turn off because I already know the ending to this. Game 5, of course, Michael Jordan's first title when he beat Magic Johnson, and Magic Johnson led Lakers back in 1991. So a number of those games have been running on NBA TV. So, I mean, between that and Dwight Howard, they've been certainly fine with their programming. React quotes of the week. If you want to keep me out, that's your business. That comes from Barry Lamar Bonds, who, you know, starting to get a little nervous, I'm sure, about Hall of Fame. You know, the Hall of Fame ballot for 2013 certainly is, you know, a year off, but still it's going to be a lot of talk. Of course, you have Bonds and Sosa, and that'll be Sosa, I believe Palmeiro will be on there, and McGuire will be on there. Bonds, of course, he thinks he's a Hall of Famer. And to be honest with you, despite the fact that he cheated, which is no question about it, let's look at reality here. Bonds, before he took steroids, and let's say that transpired in 1999, 2000, was a Hall of Famer. No question about it. I mean, Bonds could steal bases. He's a Gold Glove outfielder. He can hit for power. He can hit for average. I mean, this is a guy that was a three-time MVP before the steroid talk even was broached, before it came up. He had three MVPs by 1993, okay? And he was a Hall of Famer then. So I think Bonds is absolutely a Hall of Famer. Will he get in? Probably not. But if you keep him out, then you have to keep everybody out. You keep Bonds out, you have to keep Alex Rodriguez out, okay? So anybody, if you want to keep one out, they all fall into me into the same boat in terms of the steroid era. The thing that's going to hurt Bonds is the fact that nobody likes him. If Bonds was well-liked, the argument that I'm bringing up will be the argument that I'm bringing up to you right now will be talked about much more. The fact that he was a Hall of Famer before he even took any steroids, and to me, that would be enough to get him in. Even the purists, the baseball purists, would say, "Eh, look at him in." And if you don't think that personality and likability has anything to do with somebody getting to the Hall of Fame in any sport, go ask Chris Carter why he's still waiting to get into the Hall of Fame. His numbers, don't even look at his numbers, because, I mean, his numbers are first ballot, like his numbers are off the charts. Nobody, you know, media doesn't like Chris Carter, so he's not a Hall of Famer right now. Bottom line, that's the bottom line. There's no two ways about it. So personal feelings do get in the way of sometimes sound and reasonable judgment in the world of sports. I felt like I had nothing to lose. That is Allie Raisman, who won a bronze medal after a decision was reversed during her floor exercise this past week. Now, when this thing goes down, to actually watch it unfold was just it was unreal. It really was. Raisman does her routine, and she finishes fourth, okay, after the initial ruling. Her coach runs to the scores table. Coach runs to the scores table, fills out this paper. He's looking for a pen to fill out a protest paper. He fills out the protest paper, gives it to the judge, and within, I'm going to guess, maybe 8 to 10 minutes, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, they reverse the decision. How in that short amount of time could they reverse the decision? It's news to me. I have no idea. And I'm like, what, you know, what determined the change of score? Now, the argument from her coach was the fact that she didn't get enough credit for the skills that she displayed. And I'm like, I'm saying to myself, how can you reverse that? How can you look at a replay and say, how did we miss a move? Did her leg go up 8 inches instead of 7? I don't know how you change. I mean, there's a big difference between a bronze and nothing. It's not just gold, silver, bronze. This girl, you know, Aliyah Mustafa of Russia got nothing. And they're looking at this, and the camera's standing at her face. Her face looks like she has a blank look, like her face didn't move. And she had to be in shock. It was unbelievable. I mean, within 5 to 10 minutes, they changed this decision. I would have said only in America, but you know what? They're in London. And, of course, American, the television commentators, they're so biased. It's ridiculous. I mean, at least try to hide being biased. They, oh, yeah, it's a great decision. And, oh, hey, they missed this, they missed that. Really? Really? You could tell what moves they missed and that they should count for this amount of points, that amount of points? I mean, come on. And if that would have been done to American, we would have been ready to boycott the rest of the Olympics. I mean, let's be honest. Again, I don't know how they reversed that. I just don't get it. And there was certainly some drama for me because I told you I've been down on the Olympics. I didn't know who won. Of course, that event had already taken place. The results were already said and done. But I had been so off the Olympics that I didn't know it was, you know, it might as well have been happening in real time for me, to be honest with you. So I was into it at that point. But to reverse that is crazy. This girl goes from a bronze to nothing in 10 minutes. Think about that for a second. You've worked 4 years, your whole life, to win a medal. And certainly the girl wasn't a gold medal contender. She probably just was happy to get a medal. And you give her, and she gets nothing. I could see it in his eyes. We've been waiting for him to turn it on. That is Kevin Durant talking about the performance of one Kobe Bryant in the quarterfinal game against Australia a couple of days back. Kobe Bryant, of course, had 20 points, in the second half, hit six threes, including three in a row. That was, the triple-double game for LeBron James. Kobe, you know, had been, you know, I talked to, you know, Rosalyn Ross about this last week. Kobe had been quiet throughout the course of the Olympics. Again, I wouldn't take, and he followed that up with an 11-point performance against Argentina. I wouldn't take too much into it if I'm a Laker fan, to be honest with you. Kobe understands his body, 33 years old, getting 50,000 minutes. He's not going to go all out to try to, for the Olympics, to try to prove anything. What does he have to prove? I mean, we know he can score. You know he can play. I mean, he doesn't have nothing to prove. And again, why, you know, he's looking for a sixth ring. Why go all out when LeBron's the best player, when you got Durant, when you got all these young guns, Carmelo Anthony? He, you know, Kobe Bryant has developed into the elder statesman, into the more of the Jedi Knight, you know, Yoda. I mean, he doesn't have to prove anything. He did his thing in the 2008 Olympics. He led the team. He was their best player. He, you know, was the clutch player. You know, it's LeBron. Let LeBron, Kevin Durant, let these guys have the stage. And it's fine. And again, of course, he's not getting any credit for that. He's not getting any credit. He gets criticized. Oh, he's lost a couple steps. He's, you know, what's wrong with him? Doesn't get credit for being a leader on the team. But, you know, again, watch him in the gold medal match tomorrow against Spain. Watch him in that particular game. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will talk some college football. Can these schools return to glory? We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 45 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, you heard the fight songs of USC and Florida State. USC fight song, outside of Michigan, USC has, I think, the best fight song in the country, in my opinion. Two teams that are looking for a return to national championship glory. Two teams that have had two of the more dominant stretches, that had two of the most dominant stretches in recent college football memory, with what Florida State did from 87 to 2000 and for what and what USC did from 2002 to 2008. And deal with USC, excuse me, Florida State, USC first. I think USC, as we continue to preview national championship contenders, I think USC might could be the most complete team in the country, could be the most complete team in the country. I'm looking at this offense, and Matt Barkley is going to be the number one pick in the draft next year. They have All-Americans. They have two All-American caliber wide receivers, Robert Brooks and Marquise Lee. They have a great offensive line, and then you add a 1,000-yard rusher from Penn State in terms of Silas Red. Will it be the offense? Will their offense be on par with the offense back in 2005 with Leiner and Reggie Bush, putting 50 points a game, scoring 50 points a game? No, but it will certainly be close. I mean, they're going to score at will with this offense. I don't see how you. There's no stopping this offense. You're going to score at will. They're going to, certainly, they're going to be, I think, improved defensively. They always produce pretty good linebackers. Last year, defense gave up a lot of points, about 23 a game. I expect that number to go down. They're back. I mean, I think I'm convinced that USC is back. Last year, they went 10-2, and I thought at the end of last season that they were playing as well as any team in college football. I thought they were legit. Top five team in college football. They had some close losses, had that classic loss to Stanford and Andrew Luck. They beat Oregon at Oregon. And, they're back to the team that's going to win. They're going to be winning 10 to 11, 12 games for the next, five, 10 years. They've quit, give Lane Kiffin a lot of credit for rebuilding that program in such a short amount of period of time with the couple of years of probation that they had. But they're getting the recruits. They're getting all the best players now. There's no two ways about it. And, again, Matt Barkley coming back, again, puts them at the top of the Pac-10. And, again, to me, they could be the most complete team in college football. Certainly a team that I think can win a national championship. As far as I'm concerned, I'm looking at their schedule. They have a one-game season, and that will be on November 13th when they host Oregon. They get past that, or I should say, they get past that. They're gonna win. I think they're gonna be playing for possibly the national championship game, or they will be playing for the national championship game. Again, I am very high on this USC team. I was impressed with them at the end of last season. Again, their defense will be, I think, much improved. Offensively, they are the best. They're the best offensive team in college football. There's no two-way. There's no debate or discussion about it. They are the best offensive team in football. The question is, can their defense hold up? And they don't even have to have a great defense. When you have an offense like that, if they have an average defense, they'll be fine. As far as Florida State is concerned, certainly Florida State has all the talent in the world. They've had top recruiting classes the last 3 or 4 years. Jimbo Fisher has done a tremendous job at that. But it, frankly, it's put up a shut-up time for Florida State. Florida State was preseason top 5 last year. They had all these expectations. They lose E.J. Manuel in the Oklahoma game, and that seemed to just derail their entire season. They would end up losing that game and then lose to Clemson and Wake Forest, and that was it. They have, for a team that's considered to be a national championship contender, they have a lot of question marks. Number one, can E.J. Manuel stay healthy? When he's been on the field, he's played well, but can he stay healthy? Two, the running game. They need to have a decent to balanced running game. And the third and most important one to me is their offensive line, which certainly goes hand in hand with the running game. They have a very shaky offensive line. Can they get good enough offensive line play to keep EJ Manuel, standing straight, and also to get a consistent running game? They have a deep core of a receiver. They don't have a guy as good as Robert Woods, but they go 4 or 5 deep in that receiving core. Defensively, they are the best defensive team in college football. There's no question about it. Even without Greg Reed, who got kicked off the team, and certainly will hurt their special teams in terms of kickoff and punt return, punt coverage. But defensively, I mean, they have a dominant defensive line. Brandon Jenkins is going to be All-American. They have great linebackers. They are the premier defensive team in all of college football. There's no two ways about it. Again, look at their schedule, two-game season. At Virginia Tech on a Thursday night, and a home game, and really a three-game season. At Virginia Tech on a Thursday night, home to Florida on Thanksgiving Day weekend, and, of course, the ACC Championship on December 1st. I don't think Florida State can win a national championship. I don't think they're quite ready. I do think they will win the ACC and play in a BCS Bowl, which will be a major step. And I do think they are an 11-win team this year. I think I can see them going 11-1 or 10-2. So, I mean, which is a step in the right direction for them. Get them playing in a BCS Bowl will be major for that program. But they have too many question marks to be considered a team that can win a national championship when I look at some of the other top teams around the country who don't have those same question marks. So USC, arguably the best team in the country, certainly a team that can win a national championship. Well, it was number three in the coaches poll. Only question mark about USC is their defense a bit, and that should be a major question mark, as their defense should be improved. Florida State, a couple more question marks. Offensive line, running game, keeping E.J. Manuel healthy, great defense, good special teams, and certainly the class of the ACC. Certainly next week we'll go SEC next week and look at LSU and Alabama, those two teams as Alabama tries to repeat as national champions. Still to come, we have another segment of Are You Kidding Me? That's coming up, and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We have another guest on our show who's been a regular, and certainly we're glad to have her on. Rosalind Ross, welcome to the program.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm doing fine here. Just watching. I don't know if you see, the NBA TV is showing a replay of all these NBA Finals clinching games, and I don't know why I'm watching it as a Laker fan. That was Michael Jordan's first title back in 1991.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a lot of Jordan. I'm watching it as a Laker fan.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think, well, maybe what transpired on yesterday kind of wipes that away, so to speak, because I foresee titles in my Laker fan future. Rosalind, let's get right to it. What do you make of this Dwight Howard deal?
You know, I got to say, I am not a Laker fan, but it's hard for me to deny that this probably means that you guys are going to be right there for the title, really for maybe the next 2 years if he goes forward. So, you know, it's hard for me to say it, but I think I have to go ahead and concede that this was a pretty good pickup for the team. I've seen reports that I just read something in USA Today, actually, that said that the 76ers improved the most out of this four-team trade, but I'm hard-pressed to believe that anyone can say that you guys really had the greatest improvement out of this trade, because you get Howard and you get to stick him on a team that still has Gasol. You didn't have to give him up. And, of course, you already made the Nash pickup and Kobe's there. This looks like a great starting five for this team.
So it certainly does. And to me, unlike the Miami situation a couple of years ago, now listen, Miami got all their players in their prime. Nash is not in his prime. Well, Howard's in his prime, but Nash is not. But unlike the Miami situation, it seems like chemistry-wise, it should be a seamless transition, considering that, you know, Howard is a guy who defends, rebounds, can score. Nash is a guy who is a is as unselfish as a point guard that we've ever seen. Gasol can play inside out. It seems like the transition should be smoother in terms of on the court chemistry. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, on court, I have to agree. And really, you have to remember that the reason that Mike Brown was brought into this team was really to infuse the group with some defensive attitude. And just was
right.
It was difficult to do last year in his first year because, you know, these were older guys, and it's hard to get older guys to play defense. Now you get, you know, really the best center in the league on this team, as well as someone who has been the defensive player of the year before and who's young. You know, so you really do satisfy. I think we'll really have a good opportunity to see what Mike Brown can do with this team, because you really satisfy some of the needs that he had in effectively infusing his coaching philosophy on the team. And I agree. I think the chemistry on court will be solid as long as, you know, whatever. My whole thing is, what have anyone talked about really what the reason was that Howard would seem to be reluctant to go to this team? And, I've heard some reports that it may be just because he, you know, was not interested in being second fiddle to Kobe. I'm not sure what it is. But I just wonder about, from a maturity standpoint with him, you know, is he mature enough to get over whatever that thing was that made him not want to go there in the first place? And that's one of my big concerns from a locker room standpoint. Of course, everyone right now is saying, you know, everyone is towing the company line. They have all their ducks in a row, and the PR team has been working to make sure the right things are being said. But, you know, really deep down, what was it that really made him reluctant to go there, and is he going to be able to move past that, you know, for the common goal of winning?
Well, that's certainly a fair question. I mean, there are a million positives about this deal, but if you want to be a cynic,
is that what I'm doing? Am I being a cynic?
I like that you present another side to it, and that it needs to be talked about. I completely can understand that, but I'm just saying from a cynic's point, you know, if I'm looking at a negative point standpoint, so obviously, you know, what the question is about the back injury, how serious is that? He probably is going to miss the first part of the season, but looking long term, what about, like you said, that maturity in terms of his maturity? That certainly has to be a question mark. But in terms of, would you foresee a situation where he doesn't return to the Lakers next season, considering the fact that they can pay him $25 million more than anybody else, the endorsement opportunities? The fact that Kobe Bryant is going to be eventually, it's going to be Dwight Howard's team, that Kobe Bryant's contract is up after the two.
I'm sorry, I thought my phone did something crazy. I actually don't see a way that it doesn't happen. There is a way it doesn't happen, is if the Lakers somehow tank their season, and certainly he's not going to be somewhere where he's still not winning, and winning in a big way. But with this lineup, and really with the firepower that's coming off of the bench, I don't see this team tanking at all. So as long as the potential to really contend is there, I don't see him leaving. You're right, he definitely can get paid there more than any other team can pay him at that time. He'll be able to re-up with the Lakers, you know, for a steep price in a way that no one else can compensate him. I just don't see that he leaves. And I think he'll weigh it out with all of the things you said. Kobe will be gone. This will eventually be his team. And, you know, he fits right in with the great, great traditions of all the centers that they've had in L.A. I think this is a really good spot for him, which is one of the reasons why I was always very confused about why he didn't seem more open to it, you know, from the outset. But now that it's happened, I think once he gets there and the wins start to happen, I don't see him leaving. And on top of that, you add in that he can be compensated very well being there. I don't think he leaves. I think he stays.
Yeah, I can't. Like, and, you know, that's been a question more. I'm surprised that's even been a question. But listen, I haven't seen anyone in this era turn down max money and leave $25 million on the table. I haven't seen it. The money talks. Again, he certainly will understand that Kobe Bryant doesn't have, you know, forever to play, and I just can't see you walking away from 75 degrees every day in L.A. I just don't. There's a reason why I play. The reason why the Lakers get these players is like, you know,
exactly.
Like obviously with the money that they have to spend, but also people love playing and living in Los Angeles. I mean, lifestyle like that, and that's why going back to your question, that's why it's kind of like why was he reluctant to go there? I think that was more about pro Brooklyn. I think he really was set in on starting a new franchise, not a new franchise, but a new era, and not having to share some of the spotlight with Kobe Bryant. I think if he goes to Brooklyn, if that deal was able to get made, then he's the centerpiece. He's the absolute face of the franchise. So I think that probably he might have been annoyed by having to share some spotlight with Kobe Bryant and not going to Brooklyn.
Yeah, you know, in my close friendship circles, my running joke was that, you know, obviously he, with this whole like obsession with going to Brooklyn, maybe he had some great, great desire to become Jay-Z and Beyonce's best friend. That was my running joke. Like, it's like, dude, are you think you're gonna be having dinner with him every week? Like, what is this obsession with going
right.
there?
Yeah,
I think you're right in that. You know, certainly starting out being the face of a franchise, right? You know, and of course the fact that it is attached to Jay-Z and it is in Brooklyn, ties into what his marketing ability would have been. But again, L.A., it's not like he was going to, you know, OKC and trying to turn
right.
big marketing sponsorships out of that market. L.A. is not, you know, this is the number two sponsorship market, number two TV market in the country. So he doesn't lose anything there. And so that's what I'm saying. I think once he gets there and he really sees, no, he won't be the centerpiece. But honestly, some of the pressure gets to be taken off of him from having to will this team to victory every night. He doesn't have to do that. He has Kobe for that. But he can still be a great player and be recognized as, you know, one of the key pieces of the team on top of what, you know, all of the marketing ability and all of that stuff. And Jay-Z is not there. Sorry about that. But otherwise, he'll still have that ability to really become a brand, and I think that was high on his interest level as well.
Rosalyn, how about if just a little quick nugget? I don't know why nobody's talking about this as well in terms of how just smart the Lakers are. After the 2013-2014 season, Kobe Bryant, Ron Artest, and Paul Gasol contracts will be off the books, and they'll have
wow.
that's about $50 to $55 million. Of cap space that they could possibly have. I don't understand. I don't know what they're going to do with Kobe Bryant, but, you know, another selling point to Dwight Howard, like, look, dude, we'll get you players.
Exactly, because they'll have the cap space, they'll have the room to do it. And, you know, and people are going crazy. I'm not sure why this has come up, but people are weirded out about the draft picks, you know, and the fact that, but the Lakers have always built teams outside of that. I mean, at this
yeah.
point, they've made smart moves to, you know, and really at this point, I don't know how we can't say that Mitch Kupchak, we should just hand him executive of the year. Like, we just need to hand it over to him because he's found a way to get this done. He took I'm, you know, from Memphis, and our team took a lot of heat when it seemed like we just gave up Pau Gasol. And really, we got better, and you guys got better as well. But this has happened over and over again where he figures
yeah.
out a way to get this done without – you know, with in keeping the team as a contender, like not really having to experience any real down years, like no year where there's absolutely no way the Lakers are making it to the playoffs and not really having a great seed in the playoffs. This happens over and over again. And it fits right in with what that team does philosophically in building around. So I think you're right. In the future, there's a great opportunity to continue this tradition of bringing in free agents, being able to pay for them, and being able to surround Dwight Howard long term with players who, again, will maintain the winning tradition that happens in L.A.
How about the other pieces to this deal? And certainly we'll get to the Orlando aspect because I'm still scratching my head about what the mindset was. But we'll get to that. How about Philly and Denver? What do you like or what you don't like in terms of what they were able to acquire?
For Denver, I like the pickup of Iguodala. You know, he's been in the league 8 years. Certainly, I thought that, you know, this whole idea that he was going to be the next AI in Philly was way
too big. It was insane.
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, he was an AI, all right, but he definitely was not the version of the one they were looking for. It was just way too much to expect for him to carry that team. But, you know, now with Denver, that was a pretty solid team last year to me, and I think they really get a defensive force and someone who can still score the ball and who has veteran leadership in the locker room. And after, you know, I'm going to say very presumptuously that after he gets his gold medal tomorrow, you know, in the Olympics
Save
and
that.
Having had the chance, yeah, and having had the chance to be around, you know, guys who get it done in this trip to London, I think that he'll really infuse the Denver team with a lot of that, and it's a lot of stuff that they could use on their bench right now. Of course, they got George Karl, so they just need somebody to help kind of meld it all together, and I think that's a great pickup for them. I just read in USA Today, they said that they thought the 76ers fared better out of this, had the most improvement out from this deal than any other team. I disagree, but I do think they do, you know, they get Bynum, who certainly had his injury concerns, but at the end of the day, they have a great young nucleus there. And they have a backup center in Hawes as well, who, you know, I mean, they're looking like somebody that can be a great force, and they have Collins as a coach who will figure out how to organize it. And it's somebody that was very well aware of the fact that that team was struggling, and again, Iguodala couldn't be the star that they needed him to be. I'm sorry, go ahead, Donald.
Okay. I'm happy for the Sixers. I'm from the nearby Philadelphia area. To me, they had too many years where they were dipping in the pool with little moves. I'm happy they finally jumped in. They amnesty Elton Brand. You're looking at the starting line with Evan Turner, Drew Holiday, Thaddeus Young, Spencer Halls, and Andrew Bynum. That's an excellent starting lineup. I'm happy for the Sixers, to be honest with you. And you know, I told a buddy of mine, Andrew Bynum will be, if he's healthy, he'll be 23-12 in the Eastern Conference.
Really?
Yes. Oh,
I'm
yeah.
for
oh,
Andrew.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm high. I mean, I'm an Andrew Bynum fan. He could be a little crazy. Some of the antics he had, and you know, he could do some weird things. But I attribute that to he's 24 years old. He's still growing up. But you haven't, like, if he stays healthy, I don't think we've seen nowhere near the best basketball from him. He could be a dominant offensive player. There's no two ways about it. I think Doug Collins. It's a perfect coach. Doug Collins will light a fire under him. He won't settle for any taking nights off or taking quarters off. That I like that fit for the Sixers. It is an excellent move for them.
Yeah, and that's a guy who basically is the second best center in the league behind
right.
Howard.
Oh,
so
clearly. Easy.
Absolutely. They definitely got something to build around. I like the nucleus. I think it's a good look for them. And now on to Orlando.
I feel sorry for any real Orlando fan because they had to go through this in 1996, and this is worse to me. This is worse because, you know, I don't think they had any control over that. I think that was more of just Shaquille O'Neal wanting to go to L.A. Now you have a situation where, yes, you had to trade Dwight Howard, fine. They had no problem with that. But you pushed deals aside that were just much better. I mean, they could have, at the beginning, I'm a Laker fan, they could have had Gasol and Bynum at the beginning of the season. That deal was on the table. I don't care what anybody says.
Exactly.
That deal was on the table. Houston had a package. They won't give them basically half the franchise to get either Bynum or Howard in a three-way deal. And the Brooklyn deal is much better. Much better than what they got here. I'm looking at Aaron Afalo, Al Harrington, 5 draft picks. I understand a $17.8 million trade exception and 4 guys that nobody's ever heard of. I'm like, what is the direction that this 30-year-old general manager is going in? I don't get it.
Well, I think ultimately, you know what, I just was having this conversation just a short time ago, and I think really what it comes down to is the fact that Hennigan is
Robin
a product of Sam Presti's pedigree in OKC. And certainly that's a small market team that got it done with draft picks. And, if Brett had a chance to read any of Hennigan's quotes as it relates to, you know, how with the criticism that Orlando is getting for how they fared in this trade, you know, he's been pretty honest in saying, listen, we had to make a choice that was for the long-term vision of this team. And so I think his philosophy on how the vision is carried out long-term is closely related to Sam Presti's, which is they got the draft picks, and that's going to be four or five draft picks, and that's really what they're planning to hang their hat on. Yeah, that's what he's planning to hang his hat on, is the opportunity to get a James Harden, a Russell Westbrook, a Kevin Durant in the coming draft. That's what he's going for, and he's asking the fans to, you know, he's being a bit apologetic in that, and really asking the fans to hang in there and wait it out with him, because it's definitely going to be, you know, tough times ahead for sure. I agree with you. There were some better looking deals on the table earlier, and I was very confused with their desire to appease Howard. So Howard comes out and says, "I want to go to Brooklyn." And they expended a lot of energy trying to make him happy in that way. And I just thought, you know, this is a weird thing to have happen for a player that you're sending off. You have to do what's best for you. And I think they missed a lot of opportunities to do that.
No question.
The Brooklyn thing fell apart. You know, in L.A., you know, at one point you guys were like, you know what, we're out of this. And then fortunately it just came back around in a way that worked out very well for L.A. and in a way that, you know, quite frankly, probably does fit just right within the perfect nook and cranny of the way that this guy wants to build his team going forward. It definitely is tough on paper right now, though.
Right, I'm telling you right now, Roz, and I have pushback in terms of the draft pick and that, him trying to explain that, but I'm telling you right now, the Lakers were so down after that playoff loss to Dallas last year, after that sweep on Bynum and Gasol, more about Gasol, they were willing to trade both those guys for Dwight Howard. I'm telling you that right there. That, to me, is no question in my mind. There's no question in my mind that Orlando could have had that. My pushback to the draft picks and the whole, you know, Sam Presti thing is, when did Orlando become a small market? Like, they've given out big contracts, a ridiculous amount of big contracts.
Absolutely.
And the draft picks that they got are not even unprotected.
Exactly.
So all five of their draft picks are not, especially the first round. Forget second round picks. I mean, please, they mean nothing. I don't even think first round picks, unless they're top five, top three in the NBA, to me mean nothing. To be honest with you, but none of their first round draft picks are protected or unprotected. They're all protected.
Yeah.
And it makes it worse.
Yeah, you know what? It's the allure of sex. It's the allure of success. In that, Sam Presti, really more than anything, probably got lucky. You know, quite frankly. So, but now he sort of has this. So now his luck has turned into a philosophy, and a young guy that came up in his organization feels strongly about his opportunity to continue that philosophy in another, you know, and basically has built his opportunity as general manager on this philosophy. But honestly, you know, I was having a discussion with someone, you know, you look back at that draft when they got Kevin Durant, quite frankly, they could have gotten the first pick that year, and then they would have ended up with Greg Oden. And so
then we feel
the same way about
Great point.
Sam Presti and his philosophy at this point. But he got lucky. He got lucky with those three guys. And you know what? Now we have a guy that's got a whole job based on the luck of that, the success of that luck. But you're right. It's hard to get great players in the draft. Much harder, it seems, now than it used to be. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Finish.
No, I was just going to say, it's much harder than it used to be. And I, you know, but to your point, they've spent out a lot of money in the past. And I think, you know, again, that comes along with being the new guy on the job. You want to sort of set this idea, this standard that you're going to right the ship from its wicked ways. So now you have to come in and seem like you're putting the perspective on that, you know, we're not a big market. We shouldn't be spending this kind of money. We shouldn't be paying out this amount of money in contracts. We're going to do what I was part of in OKC. We're going to build through draft picks. We're going to lower the payroll, and we're going to build this name with a long-term vision. It's painful right now, but we'll take it long-term, and everyone will see how this works out. But again, getting good players in the draft really is just as much about luck as now as it is about your scouting, your scouts, and your player personnel. I mean, it's basically a luck of the draw.
Oh, no question about it. Listen, I don't want listen. NFL, you build through the draft. Baseball, built through the draft. NBA, you build through trades, free agency, expiring contracts, and like you said, a lot of luck has to go into it. Sam Presti. Presti learned from the Spurs. And I'm telling you right now, the Spurs would never make a trade like this.
And I agree.
And they were lucky. They were lucky from the standpoint of, now, they did a great job in drafting Ginobili and Parker, who were not highly thought of players at the time. They did a tremendous job. They do an excellent job in drafting. They were lucky from the standpoint that Dave Robinson gets hurt. They tanked the season. Let's be honest. They tanked the season, and they get Tim Duncan. And that was luck. Like you said, that's luck.
Exactly.
Well,
so
Pop has always been very critical of, you know, he was very critical with Chris Wallace with the whole Memphis deal. So I was waiting to see, you know, what he might have to say about this thing that has happened in Orlando. But I haven't seen any comments out of him yet. But, you know, you're right. I don't think they would have ever made this deal. But you're right. He definitely got lucky in what he did and then took over as coach so he could have a chance to coach these guys. And now he's one of the greatest coaches, you know, that will have ever coached in the NBA. So, you know, it's the whole thing about this is how I got my job. This is the pedigree I come from. And this is what I'm going to do to get things fixed up in Orlando. And we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, Houston brought in, I can't think of the GM's name, but they brought him in a couple of years ago because he was riding on.
Daryl Morey. You know,
Daryl Morey, exactly. He was riding on this great white hope of what he was going to do. He was a knight in shining armor. And it's been disastrous what he's done for that team. And they're in a lot of trouble as well, but he came in sort of riding on that same white horse of like, you know what, I'm going to come in, I'm going to save this franchise, and we're going to start looking at this thing like, you know, like the baseball teams are looking, we're going to start doing Moneyball, and it's failed miserably. And then especially they've been embarrassed with their pursuit of Howard. They didn't get him, and they were left standing with nothing. You know, but that's how these GMs do it. And the thing is, they get their opportunities to go in, and sometimes they get second and third opportunities when they fail all along the way. But, you know, these guys need to be able to get lucky. And I guess that's what he's hoping for. I'm just not sure it's going to happen. It's going to be a lot of losing, I would think, on the way to, you know, the luck of those draft picks if they do work out.
Yeah, Houston. Now, listen, Orlando's ineptitude kind of overshadows it, but Houston was another major. You talk about winners and losers. Houston certainly was a loser. I mean, they, you know, you amnesty Scola, who's a very good player. You get rid of Kyle Lowry, who was playing like an all-star for about half the season. Sign, you know, overpay for Jeremy Lin. You overpay for Omar Asik. And, like, what direction are they going in? If I'm a Houston fan, I would just be shaking my head. Like, what are we doing here?
Oh, I definitely have to say that a lot of Houston fans are doing that. And outside of this, you know, there was so much – they tried to generate so much excitement for their pickup of Jeremy Lin, but really outside of what that means for, you know, the diversity of their sponsorship and marketing dollars, I'm just not sure that, you know, true Hoops fans are that thrilled with – you know, if they're thrilled enough with the Jeremy Lin pickup to keep their morale up throughout the remainder of the season. I think they, you know, got themselves in a hole – really, again, with so much trying to set themselves up, you know, to be in a good position to lure Dwight Howard there and, you know, with the promise of being able to build a team around him. But it just didn't happen. And so now they're left standing as really embarrassed in the West and going to have a hard time making any, you know, hard time making any dent on the playoffs or getting anywhere, any wins this season. It's going to be rough on them.
Two last ones for me, Rosalind. Poll question of the morning for the show was, who's the NBA's best team? If you were to rank the teams right now, and I had four of them, chose Miami, Lakers, Boston, Oklahoma City. Where do those teams fall in your eyes right now?
So you said Miami.
Miami,
Lakers.
The Lakers, Boston, Oklahoma City.
Man, I was all set to tell you until you threw Boston in there. I got to say,
they had a great,
like
they had a
the
great
Lakers
offseason.
Number one. They had a great offseason. I got to go Lakers number one. And then, you know, I still like OKC.
Over Miami? Really?
I know. And here's the thing. I'm saying that out of my mouth, I'm trying to organize my why I feel that. I still feel, you know, something happened to me in the finals, which is that I gained just a tremendous amount of respect for LeBron James and what he can do when he is doing what he should be doing, which is basically taking over games, showing that he's a superstar that he is. And we saw that in him. But those games were so close. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had
it was a much closer series than people, like, no question.
It's like people, you know, it's like we saw it and it was, you know, they won four straight games and it was over. But honestly, those games were so close that I'm not willing to say that Miami is that much, you know, that they're that far away from OKC. So if I put OKC at a second, like, I guess OKC, I think, is 2A and Miami is 2B.
but you know, I don't know that I'm. I guess I'm supposed to say Boston because they did have such a great offseason. I just they still, you know, are counting on some guys who are older players. I like LA. I really do like LA taking it all the way this year. Over Miami,
that would be a dream final. How about the Olympic final tomorrow? Spain against the U.S. Do you give Spain any chance in that game?
You know, they got the Gasol brothers, and they're going to compete hard. I just, you know, that game, I got a chance to watch the game yesterday, and it was close in the beginning. I mean, really, didn't really hardly get outside of the 10-point, a 10-point change before halftime. But after halftime, we took over. I mean, we really sat down in defense and made sure we got a lockdown, and then Carmelo Anthony went off. In a way that, you know, I don't always expect him to do. But he did, and we were serious about getting the win, and we did. And so when that happens for us, I just don't see any team in international play that can compete with that. When we decide that, you know what, we let you stay with us first half, second half is over for you. I haven't seen anybody that's been able to overcome that in any significant way. I just don't really – I guess I'm supposed to say they have a chance, but I don't really see it. I think we come out of this thing with gold easily.
It's unbelievable the switch that gets turned on. Like, these games will be within 3 or 4 points, and next thing you know, it's 15 to 20, 25 points. I mean, they've had an uncanny ability I'm not sure they're doing it on purpose, turning it on and off, but they go on these runs that are just remarkable. It's really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, you'll have a very close first half, and then you'll have, you know, Kobe or somebody clanking them off everywhere, and then all of a sudden that same clanker turns it up and it's over. Like, in the blink of an eye, it's over and we've won by, you know, 15, 20 points. I just, you know, and so for that reason, I have the confidence that whatever happens in the first half, you know, whatever the level of competition is in the first half, that, you know, that team with that coaching staff will make the necessary adjustments. And when we decide to bear down, it's over in the second half. I just don't see any way that Spain really comes out of this with the gold medal. I think it's ours for the taking.
Yeah, Spain has not played well in this tournament, but to be honest with you, yeah, I've not been really impressed with them. Lost to Russia early on and really has some close games. What are your thoughts? I just thought about this as I think about France. Or what Nicolas Batum did.
Hello?
What are your thoughts on what Nicolas Batum did with the whole punch to the groin of the player because he was flopping? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I didn't see it. I actually heard about it, and you know, I saw his quote afterwards, and that he was, you know, trying to put out a feeble apology. You know, I think we've seen a good amount of little dirty play with the shot to the groin that Carmelo Anthony took as well. Yeah, we've seen some frustration on the part of these international players, and that, you know, ultimately it may come down to the fact that the USA shows up in this tournament really heralded as the favorite, and then the host country, you know, you have folks in there that are cheering as loudly USA as they would be for whatever other team is competing at the time. So I think just the level of competition, on top of the fact that we're seeing maybe a bit of resentment. I think we've seen more dirty play, you know, this time around in the Olympics than I can remember seeing before. I think it just may be the buildup of not really coming in, having any opportunity to gain the confidence of the folks to say, you know, we think someone other than Team USA is going to win this. On top of the fact, just major frustration across the board. I think we're seeing a great amount of dirty play.
Rosalind, as always, it's been a pleasure. Certainly, we will have you on over the course of the football season as we, you know, head into the training camps and kick off to the season. So, thanks for coming on, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to talking to you again soon.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Rosalind Ross, of course, Bleacher Report. You've heard it on here a couple of times now. Does a wonderful job. So she thinks the Lakers are the team to beat. I think you still have to get an edge to Miami. I got to see the Lakers come together. I got to see Howard healthy right now. But they don't, you know, the NBA Finals is not until next June. So by the time the Finals come around, I think the Lakers' upside I would take their upside, and their ceiling is higher than Miami's. I think when they're at their best, I think the Lakers are better, and I think the Lakers do match up. But right now, coming into the season, you have to give Miami a slight edge. I mean, Michael Wilbon took a two-part on my clear favorites. Like, Michael, calm down. They're not, Miami's is not even clear favorites in the East with Boston. I think Boston's going to be very good. I love the moves Boston made. Boston, they're deep. Garnett, Pierce are not going to have to play as many minutes, and I'm not going to be dependent on as much throughout the course of the season to kind of save them for the playoffs. I'm feeling the Boston Celtics. I would not be shocked if we saw the rubber match with Boston and LA in the finals. I wouldn't pick that right now, but I wouldn't be shocked, to be honest with you. So I still think you have to get a slight edge to the Miami Heat. I think the Lakers are better than Oklahoma City. I know a lot of people don't think so, but a few people have said they don't think so, but I don't see how Oklahoma City deals with the Laker front court and Gasol and Howard. I don't think they can deal with those guys in the middle. And again, Russell, yes, Lakers can't stop Russell Westbrook, but again, Russell Westbrook also has to guard Steve Nash. Before the Steve Nash move, it was a huge move as well. Before that, you didn't even have to pay attention to Laker point guards. I mean, now you didn't have to. You're like, okay, do they have a point guard? So now, Steve Nash is a dead-eye three-point shooter. And the Lakers' depth. I mean, let's be honest with you. They just added Jody Meeks. They signed Antoine Jameson. They still have Blake and Matt Barnes on the bench. They're, all of a sudden, they're now a deep team. I mean, the Lakers are loaded. From 1-8, the Lakers are absolutely loaded. 1-8, 1-9, they are a deep basketball team. As far as Orlando, again, I don't think Orlando should even have a franchise, to be honest with you. I think, like, if you can't keep a Shaquille O'Neal or Dwight Howard for the majority of their careers, I mean, does your franchise, I mean, at what point, how can you sell that to your fan base? How can you maintain a franchise if you can't keep that caliber of a player? Again, they get draft picks that are unprotected. They are protected. Five draft picks, three first round, two second round. All of those draft picks are protected draft picks. The first, forget about the second round picks. They absolutely mean zero. They might as well be like seventh round picks in the NFL. The first round picks are protected picks. Now, I don't know if they're top five protected, top 10 protected, top three protected, but they're protected. Meaning, if they say one of those teams has the number one pick or the number two pick, they will go back to its original team. And none of those teams, to be honest with you, are going to have high picks anyway. Now maybe by the time 2015, 2017 rolls around, they could have a high pick. We don't know what Denver, Philadelphia is going to look like, or even LA, depending on circumstances, is going to look like anyway. But those picks, I mean, again, those picks are protected. You're going to get draft picks. Make sure you get unprotected draft picks, especially if you're not getting a star player back in return. This is an awful move for the Orlando Magic. The move made zero sense. They come out looking like egg on their face. And the reason why I say that is one of the worst trades in NBA history is because you have a team, it's unique to have a four-team trade. But in a situation where you have four teams, three of the teams got better, and one of the other team just got considerably worse and got nothing out of the deal, that makes for just one of the worst trades in NBA history. You have four trade teams, three teams get good, and the other team is just left looking crazy and looking stupid, to be honest with you. Again, this is one of the worst, it's probably the worst deal trade in NBA history for a particular team, for the Orlando Magic. And there have been some bad ones over the course of NBA history, but this one, to me, stands out. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I will see you next week. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the PGA Championship. So long.